Rebel Force Radio presents.
Experimental Unit Clone Force 99. The defective clones with desirable mutations. They call themselves the Bad Batch.
The Bad Batch.
This is the Bad Batch After Show. After Show.
All right, chut chut, everybody. Great to be back with you. Glad you could be with us here. Bad Batch After Show coming at you on Saturday afternoon. So we know that that's real good for some of you, especially over in the UK and places when you can't join us in those evening hours. And I hope that there's a lot on your mind as there is mine. I'm sort of where Jimmy Mack was last week. And I wouldn't be if it wasn't for the fact that all signs are pointing to this being the penultimate episode. Whether or not the final episode is going to be divided up into three parts or what. Well, he's shaking his head at me already, so I might as well bring him on. What do you know?
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Head shaking Jimmy Mack here with you on a Saturday. But what I had heard actually from many sources, number one, Disney Plus, they have revealed that the final two episodes will be taking place in August 9th. Or I'm sorry, I'm still looking at July here. August 6th and August 13th. And Joel Aaron also did confirm this on Twitter. And so that's how we know then it will be a full, complete 16-week season. So definitely not the penultimate. That won't be happening until the 6th. So, but definitely not an episode that expanded anything on the Bad Batch mythology. It was an episode that I thought was great as a standalone. But here we are late in the season and really expecting the mythology that fuels this show to pick up and start running because it was established with such great foundation at the very beginning of the season. I mean, it had our minds racing on the potential for this show and where it could go. And it appears now it's just it's become this adventure of the week routine that really doesn't have too much of an impact on the following week. There were no repercussions from the Ryloth duology
as a matter of fact, one of the things that kind of set me off was they come into this episode talking about the previous mission, and it wasn't the previous mission that we had just seen. Right. So they have opportunities, these little opportunities to create continuity. They're just not using it. And I think the biggest problem I had was this creation of yet another Deveronian gangster with a horn cut off. I mean, is this like the ultimate insult that you can do to a Deveronian gangster? I'm referring to Visago. Because the whole time I'm watching this, oh, this is cool. So we're seeing how this guy got his horn chopped off. But it's not. It's not the same guy. It's not the same gangster that we see in Rebels with the horn, and then it had the run in with Hondo. So those things just—it's so easy, and then they don't do it, and then yet they create continuity where it's not necessary, right? So
I'll tell you what, man. The Deveronian meant nothing to me in this episode. As a matter of fact, I reacted sort of opposite to you. When I saw the thumbnail art for the episode and I saw a green-skinned Deveronian, I thought, oh, not Visago. Really, do we need an episode with Visago? Because I considered him to be, like, among the most boring characters in Star Wars Rebels. He was, a smuggler on Lothal and primarily only featured in the first season. And he did nothing for me. So he was like a poor man's Hondo Ohnaka almost. So I was like, why are they bringing this guy back? But then they created this whole nother, a whole different Deveronian who's hooked up with crime family. Do you remember the name of that? It was Durant?
Durant. Roland Durand is his name.
Durand.
And I kept trying to figure out Durand. I'm like, gosh, that sounds so familiar.
Yes, it does. And Rio Durand from the Solo film, but no relation. It's Rio Durant, I think, and these guys.
It
are
is Durant. Yeah, it was. It was. It's real close. Mm. And then I realized, no, Durant is the bad guy from the Darkman movie from 1990. Mm.
And so he ends up getting Hellboyed at the end of the episode, if you know what I mean. Hellboyed, with the orange.
Right.
I like seeing the Pikes. I really like the Pikes a lot. With their connection to being spice dealers, the Pike Syndicate were just that in the Clone Wars. And I've always liked that design. I like seeing a Pike show up in the Solo film. And they just have an interesting back history because George Lucas himself was the one who really took that design and ran with it. It was presented as concept art for the Clone Wars. It's actually a Pike Jedi. I don't remember the name of the artist who created that, but I think Doug Wheatley, who is a comic book artist for Dark Horse, Star Wars Dark Horse, I think he had a lot to do with refining the design. It was going to be in the video game Star Wars 1313, which also leads me to believe it was going to be featured in George Lucas's Star Wars Underworld live action show, because a lot of those elements were being developed cross currently to provide a connection. And so they never got used for those reasons, but it's a cool design. And I think they're menacing and, they are spice dealers. That's why they were on Kessel in the Solo film. And then they have these crates of spice, which are packaged just like kilos of cocaine you see on the news when there's a big bust. I thought when they...
Oh, yeah, and they rip it open and they taste it? Yeah.
I thought one of the Pikes was going to do that. Stick his pinky in a thing and taste it and be like, it's good. It's good. Yeah.
But when you've been dealing spice as long as the Pikes, just by the look and the smell, you don't even have to taste it. These guys
I find it
serious.
So funny, too, that spice is featured in a Star Wars property, a Star Wars story, the same week that the big Dune trailer drops, because spice was an element in Dune originally.
Right.
And that's where, George Lucas kind of took that from.
Well, and there are also already lots of comparisons and people saying, hey, look at Dune. This is what the sequel trilogy should have looked like. So that's all.
Well, they haven't even seen the film yet.
Right.
Every one of those trailers for the sequel trilogy blew people away. I mean, people were just, they were raving about it. We can't jump to a judgment on a film based on the trailer ever.
We should have learned our lesson. Many years ago. Yeah.
Plus, all those trailers are made by one production company in Hollywood. They're all the same, if you ask me.
The people creating those trailers, they definitely know what to do, and they know what they're doing, and they do it really well. There's no question about that, because they can make just about anything look good. Well, let's get into this. We'll give you the tail of the tape, and while we're doing that, we'll say hi to our official call screener and program observer, Tyler Page. Always good to have Tyler on with us. Sporting the Rebel Force Radio hat. Look at that.
Looks sharp, man.
Let's get a close-up. Yeah.
You look good. Is that the trucker hat? Which one is that? Tyler fumbling with his microphone.
No, that's my fault. I have him muted.
Sorry, Tyler. Oh,
it's
sorry,
a snapback.
Buddy. Oh, snapback. So those are all available at rebelforceradio.com. Just click on the store link and you're shopping. Or click on the shop link and you're in the store. I got to
pull one way or the other.
It's up at the top. Shop. It says shop. So hit that.
It's pretty simple. Great to, always to have Tyler. You're such a big help. Appreciate it, dude. So we'll get the phone number up here. So give us a call. If you're within the sound of our voices, 708-866-1737. That's 708-866-1737. Make Tyler work today, would you please? So tale of the tape, we're at episode 14. I'm sorry, 13. Season one of The Bad Batch, and it is infested. And I kept going back and forth. Is it infected? Infested, infested. And of course we know what the infestation was. Runtime almost even 29 minutes, directed by Sal Ruiz and written by Amanda Rose Munoz. And I'm kind of coming into this one just a little on the cranky side, because, and I understand what people are saying. People are saying, well, look, I think it was Peter on here on the chat, and he had a good point. He's like, hey, you know, TV used to all be filler. That's what it was. You watched episodic television. It didn't always. It wasn't really. There were very few shows, even the ones that had a mythology thread, there were very few that built episode after episode after episode for a whole variety of reasons, mainly the way TV was produced back in the day. They also didn't want to be beholden. They didn't necessarily have ends in mind like they do sometimes now. So they didn't, hey, if a show was going to last 8 to 9, 10 years, more power to it, right? They were going to do that. So
yeah,
my hang up though is that's not necessarily what we expect from television now, especially television that's associated with these major properties and a property that at its core is episodic and builds upon itself and carries this. However, I have to remind myself, we're going to sound like broken records because we had the same issues with Clone Wars. We had the same issues with Rebels.
Yes.
So this isn't new, but I think this one just feels a little disappointing. I think, and it's exactly what you said last week, Jim, when you said it's the placement of these episodes within the season. If this was episode 5 of a 16-episode season, I'd be like, yeah, this is what you expect from the first half. But we're in the back half of the season. We've got 3 left. The next one is War Mantle. We can assume, just by the title, that that's going to have some pretty big repercussions. And that's the other thing that I wanted to mention. It's not just continuity. But I'm starting to feel, I think we had a caller that talked about this, or maybe it was you, Jim, but I'm starting to feel like no suspense anymore. Like nothing's going to happen to these guys. Everything's fine. For a minute, I thought that this was going to be Sid's swan song. Sid was going to be taken out. And I'm like, okay, so this is how they finally have to leave Sid. And it's like, no, it's not.
No.
Sid lives. So that's...
Sid lives. The Lizard Queen. Sid lives.
And again, it's not... Queen. Here's the other part of it, too. It's not that I'm not enjoying myself when I'm watching them. I am. It's Star Wars. Of course, I love it. I like the characters. I love Dee Baker's characterizations of all the Bad Batch characters. I even like Omega, although my wife was watching this episode with me, and she goes, that girl doesn't look very Star Wars-y to me. I'm like, okay, well, you know. I mean, she's seen enough Star Wars that I think she has a flavor for it. And then my daughter goes, you mean Omega?
How dare you, Mom?
Yeah, right. So there was a little bit of that going on. But yes, they are enjoyable for what they are. But in terms of building on itself and building on the mythology that surrounds it, that's where I'm starting to really have my doubts.
Yeah, at least this episode, they didn't plug in a character cameo. It was really focused on the Bad Batch within their own mythology. And that's what was frustrating me the last few weeks, is that the mythology of the show seemed centered around anything but the Bad Batch. And while I get it, I say, well, it's all Star Wars, but I really need it all to kind of make some sense here within this season, as opposed to just being shallow character cameos. It has to pay off for the Bad Batch mythology, first and foremost.
That's right.
The Star Wars thing is great. the big picture stuff is the stuff I love the most. But I need the Bad Batch to be self-contained within the adventures of the Bad Batch themselves. That needs to be the priority with this series. Otherwise, I'll find no reason to go back and rewatch these as time goes by. Unless I feel oddly nostalgic for it. It needs to connect.
Yeah, and that's... So when I was doing...
It needs to connect with itself, is what I'm saying.
No, I agree. And that thought sort of hit me. The sheer volume of content that we get now as Star Wars fans from now 3 fairly long-running animated... Well, yeah, 3 long-running animated series, a new animated series. We're on our 4th one. And just looking up Visago, like I couldn't remember his name. I'm like, I knew he was Davaronian. He was in Rebels. And I'm doing all these searches just to figure out if it was him. And there is such a deluge of characters that I'm having a hard time, you know, keeping them straight. And I was thinking to myself, why am I struggling with this? Is it my old age? Why am I struggling? And
right.
That's part of it. But the other these characters in these events, they're just like one and done or two and done. And unless they really repeat, like a Hondo, for example, they're just going to be in and out of my mind and I'm not going to remember. I'll remember things like, oh, yeah, he had a horn missing. So that was my clue. So I just thought it was so derivative of a character. And Jim, when you were saying you were glad to see that there wasn't, you know, cameo of the week, I'm watching this whole episode thinking that we're getting another cameo of the week. I was thinking it was Visago. But there were some cool things. I loved the creatures and the suspense that they were able to build to the extent of the shrieking and the cavern and all of that. Really good effects. Good effects.
Yeah, great stuff. Skywalker Sound, Matthew Wood, David Collins. They're not going to ball out of the park with this. I really feel that there is such attention to Star Wars authenticity and keeping it within the mold of Star Wars that, you know, Ben Burtt would have to be proud of this stuff. That's how good I think it is.
I totally agree. In fact, I think that the production values are overshadowing the writing.
Ord Mantell looked amazing in this episode.
Yes.
When they flew in and landed at the beginning, it just everything about and I like the flavor of Ord Mantell too. Mm-hmm. It's seedy. It's as Omega says, it's great.
Yeah, but it's not a knockoff of Coruscant. You know, it's not a knockoff of anything
close,
else.
Yeah.
It looks it. You know now that that's Ord Mantell. And yeah, it's funny because when I was watching the episode and they flew in, I'm like, and all of a sudden the line keeps coming back. Oh, the bounty hunter, we ran into an Ord Mantell, you know,
course,
changed my
yeah.
mind. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, now I'm starting to see, you know, this world. So it's very cool. Again, I think that, you know, anytime we come on and one of us or both of us is a bit critical or impatient with the storytelling, we're quickly reminded, yeah, but it looks amazing. And that's true. It looks amazing. But I do think that the production values are outshining the storytelling a bit right now.
Well, and so, I mean, as consumers of this kind of content nowadays, I think we do expect more. We expect more of a through line running through seasons of shows, especially a show like The Bad Batch, which we don't know if there's going to be a season two.
Right.
That hasn't been announced. I mean, even with Star Wars Resistance, for as god-awful as that was at times, they had a season two announcement right at the beginning of season one. And Bad Batch does not have that luxury. I think that there will be a season two. I really do. Fingers crossed that there will be, because I think there are just so many loose ends that we need to see tied up before this season ends. You know, big build up, and then everything pays off like in the last 5 minutes of the season finale. I don't want that.
Right.
There's too much rich stuff being, too much great foundation being laid down. And,
yeah, totally agree.
An opportunity to blow our minds. But the show is playing it safe. They're playing it safe with developing the storyline. They're playing it safe with putting the crew at risk. The stakes are never, they seem like they're high, but you know the band will always pull out and be safe at the end. And just the lack of throwing in characters at this point, characters like Boba Fett, Darth Vader, just having a larger Imperial presence. I think every episode there should always be the threat of the Empire crushing down on them, even if the Empire isn't really present in those episodes.
Right.
I did like seeing the Pikes, though, in this one. So, I mean, sometimes you have to take the good and give up something, but I just would like to see a stronger through line. People compare these shows to Marvel stuff all the time.
Right.
How can I watch a full season of a Marvel show and get a rich storyline out of each and every episode? But with Star Wars, I have to wait and wait and wait. And if they're comparing it to The Bad Batch, like I've seen comparisons of Loki to The Bad Batch, The Mandalorian to The Bad Batch. I think that's unfair. The Bad Batch is an animated show.
Right.
It's clearly targeted toward a younger audience. But I even think the younger audience, they don't want the adventure of the week. They want something that will pull them in, you know, and leave them hanging each and every week. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? The Bad Batch isn't really providing that. I don't know if Marvel animated series do that. There haven't been many Marvel animated series in the last few years. There was a Spider-Man, and there was the Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever that thing's
called. Yes, that's right. They did. They did one.
I was going to say of the universe because He-Man is
that's
hot
also
topic
a big
topic.
Yes, yeah. It is. I watched that first episode yesterday
and
there's a lot to love about it. I mean, I love that so much of the design is inspired by the toy line, and that's not something that you always see, and that's a real treat. I see some of the criticisms, but I'm going to wait until I see, you know, the whole thing before I hold back or, you know, before I say anything. Rebel Force Radio's Masters of the Universe after show not coming anytime soon.
Well, I was just wondering because it's there.
It's there.
I could turn it on and I might watch it.
I love the animation and there's something about, you know, He-Man, that just makes me feel like a kid again. I love it. And I also like watching things that there's no pressure to have to do an after show conversation about. So everyone's a treat to get that kind of entertainment. Okay, so super chat here from Hunter. Thank you so much. Flabbergasted by the pacing direction of Bad Batch. Like you guys, still very entertaining. Hoping for a season two to expand the story and era more. I want to mention something about the season two announcement, and I don't know if Disney operates similar to Netflix, but you may recall our good pal Matt Lanter was on a show called Jupiter's Legacy, and we had Matt on, and I mean, the show was being talked about and praised, and critical ratings were super high. The critics were in seemed to be enjoying it, maybe less so than the fans. I think it was one of those where the fans liked it more than the critics. It was one of those sort of fairly lopsided, but point being, the ratings were really, really high. Netflix was very bullish about the ratings. It was like number one in 80 countries, something like that. And it still didn't get a second season. So I use that as an example to say that streaming, I think, is so different in terms of the company's deciding whether something is worthy of a follow-up season. I think it's very different from network television format and distribution and those initial ratings that come in. I think they're going to wait before they announce it. I think they're going to wait until this whole season wraps.
Yeah. Well, Matt told us Netflix was on the 30-day sort of judgment.
Right.
And, you know, obviously the Bad Batch has been around longer than 30 days, but we'll see.
But keep in mind, too, Jupiter's Legacy was Netflix where it was a dump. It was a dump and binge, whereas this, you know, is different. Yeah. So I can see them giving that 30 days makes sense because they're probably figuring that the average person takes 30 days to binge watch a series unless you're really, really, you know, into it. But at any rate, no, that was a good point. Eric, our buddy from Phoenix, nice super chat here. So we now know that flashlights are called torches in the Star Wars universe. If they start having tea and crumpets, .. Yes, torches is a British term for flashlight.
Oh, and, okay. I didn't get it.
Yeah. So it's they're torches like, you know, the trunk is not the trunk. It's the boot, you know, so we have those. Here's Matt saying, guys, it's 1 a.m. in Australia and I'm too drunk to call in. No, that's exactly when you should call in, Matt.
Yeah,
only just tuned in, so don't know your thoughts, but mine are meh episode Space Whales level bad. Oh, no. I don't think so. No, Matt, I don't think Space Whales
not
level
even close.
Bad. The frustration is not so much with the episode itself, but the lack of a connection with the other episodes.
Yes. Yeah, we're expecting something. We're expecting itches to be scratched at this point in the season with only three episodes left, and we're not getting that. And, you know, hey, Matt, don't feel bad you couldn't call in. It's 1 a.m. where you are, and you're drunk as a skunk. It's 1 p.m. where Swank is. He's also drunk as a skunk. Look, and look at him. Look at him go. Hosting the show.
That's true. Oh, God. All right, let's go to the phones here. We've got Jack from Kansas. Jack, thanks for waiting. Appreciate it. You're on with Rebel Force Radio. Hello.
Try Jack.
Hello, Jack. Jack from Kansas.
There he is.
Hey, Jason. Hey. Jimmy. How's it going, guys?
Chut. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to be heard from. And Tyler asked me, what do you want to talk about today? And I said, well, sounds a lot like what you guys are already talking about, that I kind of was a little on the episode as well. It just didn't. Jimmy, you've been talking about it for a couple weeks, and I don't think I agreed with you till now. There's just not been the tension. I mean, the whole time, just watching them fight these bugs, I was ready for Tech to get bit or something. Like, let's see one of them get hurt, get into trouble, have, you know, the Bad Batch almost just feels invincible. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we need that moment of struggle for him. You know, just like when Wrecker had the chip, there was so much tension. You know, we were ready. He was going to snap at any moment. It added so much to the show that we just haven't had for several episodes.
Even this Hunter got his you know what, beat pretty good in an episode there in the first half. I remember, because I remember him, you know, just coming, you know, conscious and opening his eyes and seeing his buddies and stuff. So they're
right.
Yeah, it did feel that way. The bugs, I couldn't quite tell, other than swarming and risking, you know, falling off of the tethers. Other than that, I couldn't tell what their thing was. What do they do? Other than just kind of smart,
right.
You know, like, do they bite you? Do they eat you? I mean, so the actual threat of the bugs, I wasn't sure about.
And I think that's exactly the problem. There's just not been a threat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not a big
what
enough
are some
threat.
Things,
right. Well, okay. The thing about those bat birds or whatever the hell they were, obviously by the sheer numbers of them, they cause a great deal of damage and havoc. You know, I mean, they're going to knock these people off of those ropes they're holding on to or whatever. And they fall into the pit, you know, nobody's going to survive that.
Sure.
And so that's just what it is. I mean, if you're in there, and obviously they're a known danger,
right,
because there was mining going on down there. So with those mining cars, whatever purpose they served, maybe they were drilling for spice on Ord Mantell. Who knows? But the people who used to work those things obviously knew that if they woke up that hive, there's a huge threat to them, because they could be knocked down into the pit.
Yeah, so they had to abandon that mine, obviously.
Yeah.
But you know, that I liked that idea of her being able to, she had that sort of backdoor into the office. It reminded me a bit of in From Russia with Love, when Bond and the guy from the agent from Turkey are spying on the Russians, because they go in that underground moat and then they pop up the periscope and they're looking at them. The one thing that I didn't know of was how did Duran's men find that underground tunnel, that mine, so quickly?
Maybe they already knew it was there. You know, maybe they knew it was there.
I don't know.
Because they had taken over. Wouldn't they have scrubbed that office? It wasn't really that well hidden.
Well, if that would have been the case, if Durand would have known that he had that mine leading right into his office, when he realized that the spice was gone, the first thing he'd have done is throw back that rug and open up Grandpa Munster's trapdoor and, you know, and see what's going on down there. But that wasn't what he did. He looked around like it was a magic trick, like they just vanished out of thin air.
I guess. Yeah. That's kind of a plot convenience.
All of a sudden they're like, there they are. I'm like, where the hell these guys come from?
You know, it reminded me of Indiana Jones, about, Temple of Doom.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They were on those cars in the dark. And also what else reminded me of another movie was when he dropped the flashlight down into the pit. It was like when the Hobbit was in that cavern, and he knocked over that suit of armor or something, and it fell down into that chasm and awoken the whatever it did. It's been a while since I've done Lord of the Rings, but those are two things that I was thinking of when I was watching this.
Jack, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it very much. We've got a first-time caller, Richard from D.C. Hello, Richard. Welcome to Rebel Force Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
One thing I have to say that I like about Bad Batch is that it introduced me to you guys' show. I really liked listening to you guys.
Thank you. Oh, great. Thank you. Killer. Welcome.
So I agree with you. Kind of came out of this episode feeling, you know, what was this? But I do have like a theory about what they're doing with Bad Batch. I think Bad Batch is prepping a lot for the book of Boba and season three of The Mandalore. But I also think that what they're trying to do is create that Shadow of the Empire storyline. I think the part of the future of Star Wars is going back to the Shadow of the Empire book. And so that they're trying to the Pike Syndicate, Darth Maul, I think, is going to start playing if they do a season two and things like that. I think the Bad Batch are supposed to play a part of introducing that underworld of Star Wars that's been seen, you know, through Han Solo and things like that. It just everything seems to be indicating that. The Solo story talked about that. Everything seems to be indicating that they want to kind of delve into that underlayer of the Empire. And I was wondering what you thought.
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't see the Bad Batch laying down any sort of foundation for Book of Boba Fett or The Mandalorian. And I'm curious to know what sort of foundation you think is being laid.
I think what's being laid is, well, you have the one bounty hunter. I'm terrible with their names. But
Fennec.
They introduced her for the
right.
first
yes.
time. Fennec, yes.
I'll give you one point for Fennec Shand.
And the bounty hunter, I mean, I think that their whole existence now is in that kind of that bounty hunter, that, you know, hired missions type of world. And so you start seeing like the Pike Syndicate get introduced here. You start seeing the, Sid kind of whole world is this underworld and all that. So I think what they're doing is that they're setting up and they're kind of like painting. And then there's the connection between Omega and Boba Fett. It just seems to be like this kind of like, we're going to like show the Empire being built up here. And then that there's this underlayer that is out there that makes up the whole galaxy that the Empire kind of thrived on, you know, slavery, the bounty hunters and things like that.
Okay. I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you another point. I'm not going to give you any points for Boba Fett and Omega because it is not obvious to me that they're going there. I mean, they mentioned Boba Fett, they dropped it, but they got to do better before I'm going to concede that there's going to be any connection other than what's already been stated between Omega and Boba Fett. Not that I don't want there to be. I really do want there to be. But I'm not ready to go there yet. I will say something that's interesting that you brought up is the Empire's willingness to do business with the underworld, which we see on full display, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, as you know, Darth Vader hires out, you know, several of them. And so, yes, I think that it's hard to imagine the stuffy old Republic that we meet in the prequels to ever lower themselves to do business with, Valorum's government would never, I don't think, do business with the underworld figures.
Definitely but, not. I mean, Panaka even says
he
resisted wanting to land on Tatooine because it's run by the Hutts, the gangsters.
Yeah, the Hutts are gangsters. Like, it's so beneath them. So I'm going to give you that point. I would, and I give it to you because I would also love to see more of it. I would love to see, or even hear conversations about, man, in the age of the Empire, it's really good to be, in the underworld because you don't have to be looking over your shoulder all the time. And as long as you grease the skids, maybe with a few Imperial officers, you can make a good living. I don't know. I like it. I think that's a cool idea. I wish that I saw as much connection as you're seeing. I think it's great that you're seeing it. I'm not seeing it. But I hope you prove you're proven right. I really do.
If I could just say, I think it's hard to believe that a show that can't even set up its own consistent chronology and mythology is going to be setting it up for future live action shows. I find that hard to believe. And the things that have already been, the things that were brought up, like the underworld, the Pikes and all that stuff's already been established. So the show is just feeding off of that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's prepping us for anything that will eventually happen in live action. Maybe for a season two of The Bad Batch. But again, I want to see season one build upon itself before it starts establishing foundations for other shows.
Yes.
It needs to live, it needs to pay off for this show, and it also needs to live up to some of its potential of that, of those setups that happened earlier in the season. It just seems like a lot of the tension of the show has been stripped out ever since, well, ever since they rescued Omega from Cad Bane. I'd say then it's, the show's been playing it pretty safe now for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I really thought it would be ramping up into something bigger and a more impactful storyline with higher stakes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still great. I mean, that's my criticism is just the mythology of the Bad Batch is paper thin right now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right when you're like, well, be a good show first and then worry about tying into everything else. Yes, right.
And I think it is a good show. Don't get me wrong. I just think the internal mythology for it is lacking a little bit.
Take care of your own storyline. Maybe that's a better way to put it, not be a good show.
Don't worry about
Take
Rebels.
Take care of your own storyline first.
Don't worry. You know, clean up the loose ends from the Clone Wars. That's why, like, introducing Cut LaQuane and Rex was so great because you were getting their story. Now it's starting to set up other series. I don't think that that's a good function for this show.
I agree. Let's see what Travis from Idaho thinks. Travis is a patron member and also a first-time caller, so thanks very much, Travis, for holding on. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Chut-chut, how are you doing today?
Chut-chut, doing great.
Excellent. So was anybody else a little confused how we got into the tunnel system in town, and then when we went to go get the spice, we had to fly outside of town? Did we take a, like, 5-mile detour out of town to get to Sid's office?
Well, you know, she was standing in the doorway of the ship when she called them over and told them of the plan. So I just assumed they stayed on the ship and flew to where they were going. Maybe I missed that. Is there something I might have missed? Maybe. I don't know.
That's why I'm confused.
Oh.
Okay, so maybe they did get it done outside of town. Yeah, I never even thought of that. I assumed that they had just gone into a tunnel there in town somewhere.
Yeah, well, someone in the chat mentioned, because I was picking it apart, Travis, like you were, particularly about how secret that tunnel system was underneath that mine, underneath Sid's office that led to the outside. And someone said, well, didn't Sid mention that was how Roland and his goons were able to take over in the first place? And I don't remember that, honestly, if that is the case, if they established that, you know, I missed it. But that's, again, that's even more reason why when the spice was missing, why didn't the guy, why my first thought would be like, they must have come through the secret underground tunnel. You know, while I was going around chasing my precious, what was it? What was the name of the cat like thing?
Oh, Ruby.
Ruby. Yeah. Ruby. Does Ruby count as a cameo? We saw her.
Well,
before.
No, because Ruby is part of the Bad Batch show. You know, she was introduced to us in the Bad Batch.
Right.
We should be seeing more.
That's
Ruby,
continuity actually. Right there. Ruby returns.
Yeah. I've been waiting, man. I've been waiting.
Well, Travis, what do you other than that, what may be a little continuity issue that you point out? What else are you thinking about when it comes to this episode? Are we being too unfair? Are we being unnecessarily harsh?
You know, I don't know. The one thing, the only complaint I really had was it was very dark. And so trying to watch it was hard.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean.
Yeah, that's been a complaint of mine about the Solo film and quite honestly, a lot of cinematography that I've been seeing in recent years. I know there was an episode of Game of Thrones that all the hardcores were really upset about because like the whole episode was shot in the darkness. I normally am sensitive about that. In this particular episode, I wasn't. For whatever reason, maybe I was watching it in ideal viewing. I wasn't watching it on a phone or an iPad or excuse me. I got to clear my throat.
Well, one thing
in a bright room. I could continue.
Oh, okay.
Or in a, like a bright room or anything. It was like optimal viewing conditions for me. And Joel Aaron had set it up on Twitter. He said, things are going to be getting very dark this week on The Bad Batch. I was so excited. I was like, oh, okay, here we go. Like, Omega's going to slip to the dark side or something crazy is going to happen. But no, it was, he meant literally dark. And, you know, he is the director of lighting for the show. So obviously he's thinking nothing but in terms of that, you know, story be damned. This episode's dark. But I thought it was fitting. I thought it looked really cool, actually. And the menacing combined with those great sound effects and the wild visuals of all those bats flying out of the chasm. I thought it was really great. But I have heard a lot of complaints about the darkness in this episode, too. So some, I think the there's a lot of darkness in the Bad Batch series on a whole.
From a technical standpoint, and in the chat, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I understand is that this is streamed in across Disney Plus in 4K and with HDR, and HDR, you know, where you get those real blacks on your monitor or your TV, it does make it difficult if you're, you know, maybe watching it in a well lit room. You're not watching it at night with the shades pulled down or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is some, and I, by the way, I've tried all those tricks with Solo. We've talked endlessly about Solo being so dark that you can't follow it. And I still, it helps a little bit, but it's still so dark. It looks like they're just trying to hide things.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Cause I'll never forget this. I've seen this terminology used online by movie freaks and stuff, when they're talking about the way things are lit and shot. Mm. And I'll never forget this because one time I was at Kyle's house and we were watching something. I can't remember what it was, but he jumped up and he started pointing at things on the screen. He's like, look how crushed the blacks are. Look how crushed the black is. And I was like, yes, yes, Kyle, yes. I can't believe it. But I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I was like, crushed? What do you mean? What do you mean, crushed? So I don't know if you can answer that or anyone in our listening audience, but...
Well, Peter, I got to say, you're one of our most loyal watchers, and you're always very active in the chat. I'd love to have you call. You're saying, gotta Dolby Vision stuff, folks. If not, you might as well be watching on an old tube TV. So I'm going to invite you to call. You see the number on there, 708-866-1737. We got a few lines open. We will pop you on. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about maybe the technical side of this stuff and how we can set up optimal Bad Batch viewing environments, because I am curious. Yeah, the crushed blacks, from what I gather, Jim, that's when everything just looks sort of soupy and you can't tell what's supposed to be gray and what's supposed to be black. So on the darker end of the spectrum, everything is kind of rather than having, you know, gradations or strong gradations between the,
oh, thank
the
God.
Levels. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know how to react. I didn't know how to be like happy or pissed, or I didn't know what to do. I was like, damn it. I didn't know how to react. I was trying to.
Yeah.
Whatever.
All right.
Whatever. So here I think I just let loose a string of profanities and just maybe said, okay, interpret that however you want.
All right. We've got Javier Solorzano, and he is sending us a super chat here. Okay. It's time for the RFR Make It Rain super chats time again. That's very kind of you.
Yes.
Javier.
And yes.
He's thrown out several of these, so appreciate it. We do appreciate it very much. Jill 716, another loyal watcher of the Bad Batch After Show here. I totally agree with the complaints about this episode, but I think the Ryloth arc was setting up a clone rebellion, even if it did include a cameo.
That's
Let's
right.
hope so. That would be great.
In those two episodes, that was my favorite moment, was when Howard Hauser...
That'd even be better.
Clone Trooper Howard. Spread out.
Yes, if there's a God in
Howard,
heaven,
fine
please
and
do
Howard.
That.
Clone Troopers Howard, fine and Howard. So Hauser, though, that was my favorite moment when he put down his arms and convinced those other troopers to put down their arms. And, of course, something that we've been wanting to see is a clone trooper versus stormtrooper battle or rebellion or something. That was something that was being explored for Episode 9 by Colin Trevorrow. Finn would have led a stormtrooper rebellion on Coruscant.
Mm.
But, you know, that got swept under the rug for the JJ script instead.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's an interesting concept. And if we know anything about Star Wars, interesting concepts and ideas, even if they do get swept under the rug, sometimes somebody lifts up that rug and sweeps them out and uses them. So
that's right.
Maybe we might see exactly something like that with Hauser leading the way, or Howard, or whoever.
N64 Rescue says, I appreciate my brothers at Rebel Force Radio, and I'm looking forward to War Mantle. Yeah, so are we. So are we. Mm-hmm. I think with a title like that, and knowing what that title means, as it's a big part of the early episodes that we saw, where this is, you know, really the fundamental issue of going from clones to conscripted troops and all of that. So hitting that for sure. Oh, look who it is. We got Peter on. He did call in. Thank you, Peter, for joining us.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Well, first of all, thank you for always being here and being such a great contributor to the chat and engaging with all the other folks that are watching and chatting. We appreciate that very much. But what can you tell us about, I said something about HDR, and I could be way off, but that's my understanding of the, you know, the dark issues and why it's so hard to see detail sometimes.
Well, you know what? I'm a strange situation in that I'm probably one of the few husbands where the wife wants a bigger TV than the husband. So
well
when
done.
We went shopping, she wanted 75. I said, that's a little too big for the room, but since we weren't going to the movie theater, I'm more of the features guy. So I just wanted to make sure, you know, it had everything that was state of the art. So recommendation for people out there, if you're looking for a new TV, there's a brand of TV called TCL, right? You may not have heard of it. I didn't until fairly recently. I started doing homework. Very affordable and has all these features. So Dolby Vision and the one we got recently, it's a form of HDR, which I guess is makes the blacks blacker. So Kyle would like that. Makes the brights brighter. And it just adds to the whole viewing experience. So I think, you know, I try to watch some of these episodes if I can't sleep on a TV in our guest bedroom, and I couldn't see anything on Thursday night or Friday morning, whenever it aired. So I had to go downstairs and watch it. So I think a lot of folks, I think that, you know, Lucasfilm is so ahead of the curve here with the way that they're, mastering everything. And so if you don't have those features, you might want to look them up, because I think just turning up the brightness isn't really going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, those are good tips.
Those are good tips. But while we have you on the line, go ahead, Jim.
Well, I just had a question about maybe iPads. Maybe you know something about this, because I'm playing the Bad Batch episode right now on my iPad. And as you can see, it's a little hard to make out the detail. There's Jason.
Oh, look, I'm in the show. Look at that.
But look, you can see it's a little hard to really see anything at all.
That looks like
maybe you can give me some help with that.
Can't
look
tell
at
if
this.
You're watching Solo or you're watching just a black screen.
Oh, let's see Jason again there.
There we are. That's right. Peter, while we have you, I think it was you that was sort of starting this conversation. I was quoting you earlier about you saying, look, you know, hey, filler used to be the way that TV was done back in the day. And I think you brought up the X-Files comparison. Look at X-Files.
That's
went across,
right.
You know, yep. Now I think, 13 seasons, though these later seasons, these last two kind of reunion seasons that they've done have, that's not even true either. There were sort of standalones in those as well. But what kind of comparison were you making then with X-Files?
I think I felt when I was a kid watching the show, if it didn't tie into the whole alien mythology, then it was sort of a waste of Friday night or Sunday night or whatever.
Oh, really?
And looking, I don't know.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but I just kind of feel differently. I like the Creature of the Week when they would, find somebody in the sewer, and he'd be weird.
Yeah,
but yeah,
the
X-Files
totally
mythology with the black ink and the eyeballs and all that stuff, I take it or leave it.
Yeah, they lost their way. I mean, Eric from Phoenix was saying in the chat that him and the family are starting to watch it from the beginning. And yeah, having looked back at some of those episodes, you're right, the Monster of the Week ones really stick out. But yeah, as a kid, I thought, you know, it's not progressing the overall story. But, you know, I was wrong, because the ones that weren't part of the mythology really were deeper and funnier and had a lot more character moments. So I think, you know, for everybody just saying, hey, why isn't this moving? I think, you know, just enjoy the story. Enjoy. I think Wrecker, if you rewatch this, I think Dee was amazing in terms of just the natural, like, way that some of the sounds he was making. And just rewatch it. You'll see. It's an amazing performance.
Yeah,
so.
we don't deny the technical greatness of the show,
yeah,
nor the talent of Mr. Bradley Baker. But it's just something specifically that we're focusing on, and that is the expansion of the Bad Batch mythology within the Bad Batch season itself is something I think we're all itching to see now as the season is ramping up toward its conclusion. So we want to go on a ride that's significant.
I would love to see a standalone episode, right? Follow me on this one, where we go to Coruscant and we see what's going on as the Emperor is taking power, right? Because all that's going on right now, as the Bad Batch is hanging out, doing their missions and stuff like that. Let's see what's going on. Let's see Palpatine and, like, what he's doing in terms of working with the Senate and everything that's kind of changing there. Like, I'd love to see just a more... A broader scope to the storytelling, and they seem to be just very narrowly focused on this. So maybe, like, in upcoming seasons, they can do something like that. But every time we do see a little bit of the Empire and them and their, you know, dominating some of these planets and stuff like that, to me, that's really the exciting part, because you're like, oh, wow, this is, we never saw this before, you know?
Yep.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Totally agree
on that.
Peter,
and that's been the strongest thing about this season as far as its addition to the overall Star Wars mythology, is we see the transition from Republic into Empire. We see how the normal citizens are reacting toward it and how it affects them. We see the growing oppression, and that's what is truly, you know, the most sinister part about this show, is we know what the Empire turns into. We know we're watching people who are not prepared for what's coming, and we're already seeing them deal with strife and oppression early on. So it's just great to see the Empire sink its fangs into the population, and that's where the show is really at its strong point, as opposed to these mission of the week, do something, you know, run an errand for Sid. This was essentially running an errand for Sid again.
Well, yeah, it was. I do want to point out, because there were, you know, you get these little character moments here and there, and as Peter was talking about, and there was one, I think, with Omega. Is Omega is the one, she's clearly the heart of the Bad Batch. She's the one that reminds them that there's more than just, you know, supplies and the next mission. There's things that you do out of loyalty and friendship. And so she was reminding Hunter at the beginning of this episode, well, we just heard that Sid, you know, we're just going to, like, leave now. I mean, after everything that Sid's done for us, and, you know, some of that is childish naivete, but at the heart of it, there's also conscience and kindness and all of that. And of course we know that Sid and Omega had their moment when she was teaching her how to play that game, and, you know, and it's pretty obvious that there's, as tough of a old bird as she is, I think Sid has some real fondness for Tiny, as she calls Omega. And so that was something at the beginning where, you know, the bad batch, they were willing to just, okay, all right, well, we're out of here. We'll go to the next place. But, you know, at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, but wait a minute, are they still under her debt? Why are they still running missions for her when there was so much made of the fact that they were able to, you know, that Omega was able to make enough through the gambling that she paid off the debt? So I don't know.
I don't know either. Apparently they're trying to raise funds. Has anybody noticed that these guys have an unlimited supply of arms ammunition and fuel. So I don't, you know, there are just certain things I'm wondering about myself. That's where it seems like this, the growth of these characters sort of stalled. They should have moved on by now. Why are they still sticking around with Sid? Do they have to make money? Do they still, you know, need to get funds to do whatever they need to do? It seems like Tech could probably hack into a bank if he wanted to.
That is true.
And the evolution of these characters is just stalled. It's just stopped. Wrecker, you know, he went through his troubles with that ship. We've seen Hunter evolve into a father figure for Omega, but there's been no challenges to that lately. Tech is always there, creating little devices and things when they need him, but he really hasn't gone on much journey as a character at all. And Echo is the most forgotten character in this group, and he is the one with the richest backstory. You know, he goes back to the Citadel arc,
right?
And even before that, and his story is, I think he was in the Rookies, like the fifth episode of season one of the Clone Wars. And I just find he's being completely forgotten about. And like I said, he's probably the most compelling character of them all. He was taken by the Separatists and turned into basically a war computer for them.
Yeah. Right.
And then rescued, and then now he's part of the Bad Batch. But what purpose does he serve? He rarely is an element in any episode at all. He's the most forgotten character. And he's cool. He's a Lobot. He's got Borg arms. He's just a wild ride. But, I mean, he's only functional when they need him to, like, hack into something with his little...
He does get forgotten a lot.
Yeah,
he does get forgotten a lot. And I think that it could be because he's, I don't want to say that he and Tech are sort of competing for time, but I would say that maybe they are because, you know, but there could be more of an R2-3PO thing going on there if they wanted to make it that way. You know, 3PO knows what to do. R2 knows how to do it. Maybe you could put it that way. Somebody mentioned in the chat, I think it was Moni G, that she loved this little break in Wrecker's voice at one moment. I noticed that. I just want to give you a shout out. I noticed that. I thought it was just showing some of the nuance that D. Baker was taking with these vocal performances. They're really master classes, really, voice acting. I mean,
he's a genius.
goes without saying. Let's see. Nathan from Maryland joining us. Hello, Nathan. You're on with Rebel Force Radio. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Chut-chut.
Last night after I watched the episode, I tried to Google to do some research to see if there was any significance in dehorning of character in other works of fiction or whatever, because the way that scene played out, it seemed like that was such a big deal. And he even says, it's a small price to pay as opposed to death. And all I could really find, not to get religious or anything, there's actually a scripture passage in Amos chapter 3, verse 14, and it's talking about God's punishment of the Israelis for forgetting who their master was, et cetera. And it says that that in the day I punish Israel for their transgressions, I will also visit the altar of Bethel, and the horns of the altar shall be cut off and fall to the ground. So, I mean, that's really stretching as far as influence, I guess.
No, are you kidding me?
That's all I could really find.
It's some of the most profound, you know, forgive me for using this term, but it's some of the most profound mythology of the Western world. So don't apologize for bringing it up. I think it's always relevant. I think that's cool. If you were to read that scripture while watching that scene, you would see that. So yeah, I think there's something deeply symbolic about cutting that horn off. And so there could be something to it. I can't, it's not a stretch for me. If we had Dave Filoni here, he would say, well, you know, they're very proud race and they have those horns and, you know, they don't grow back. So, you know, once you cut it off, then everyone exactly. knows that they've welched on something. So I could see that being almost like a scarlet letter that if you're in the
right.
underworld.
And you also think of, just to think of as many times in ancient cultures, they would cut limbs as a form of punishment. And
right.
as you said, as a scarlet letter, like, oh, I was a thief, so I'm missing my fingers, or I spoke out of turn and I'm missing my tongue, you know. And, of course, we don't have horns, but it's, you know, it
you might
is
not.
A fate worse than death. Cause, right. It's almost like a fate worse than death, because how is this guy going to go and conduct more business in the underworld if they know, it looks like you dove across somebody? You know?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a good one too, because, you know, they kept saying, I think the one of the Pikes was saying that, you know, you'll experience, you and your whole family will experience pain like you never have. I mean, it's not, I think they're of that mindset where it'd be too easy just to, you know, blaster bolt in the back of the head, you know, execution style. They really want to make people pay. And that's right. a great way to do it. So he's sort of branded in a way. So, very cool. Thank you for that. That's a great observation. Anything else about this particular episode, jump out at you?
Since you're asking real quick, not so much about this episode, but, last week, I wasn't able to get a chance to listen live. I was at work. When you guys were talking about Hauser, and how, if a Jedi would have walked in front of him, he'd probably kill him. But other than that, he seems to just have a personality because he's older, but he's still affected by Order 66. The take I kind of had was that I think back to the first episode, and when the Bad Batch got to Kamino, they were walking around, like, I hardly recognize these people, because it seemed to me at the time, even before he met Hauser, that there was an unspoken second part to Order 66, which was, yes, kill the Jedi, but it was also a flip that switch that just turned off an individual personality.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see Hauser, you know, acting completely normal as the clones did a month before, with his own personality, talking back against orders and everything, to me, that reads that Order 66 just didn't affect him at all, because what they've shown us in this series, I think the biggest addition to canon is probably that there's more to that order that we don't know. They really are all like droids. When Palpatine is giving his speech on the hologram on Kamino, they're all hooping and hollering, and the Bad Batch are the only ones standing there looking around at each other like, what the heck is going on here, guys? So, you know, I don't know if that's accurate, because they never said that in words, but... But yeah, I think that definitely should be revisited, because there's more. It raises more questions, you know.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Thanks, Nathan. That's a really good point. You know, this is often the case where George will do something when he's telling a story, and it, you know, it may look, you know, very convenient, but in his mind, it's black and white. You know, I could see him. Well, you know, they had a chip. And, you know, then they order 66 and they hate the Jedi all of a sudden. And that's the way it is. And then it's up to guys like Dave Filoni and, you know, maybe Jon Favreau to create some, you know, some more texture to that. It's not just as it can't. If you're going to tell more stories, it's going to include Order 66 ramifications of such, you can't have it just as maybe quite as black and white as George intended. So these other creatives have to come in and give it a little bit more texture. That might be what we're seeing.
I thought that the clones that worked closely with their Jedi generals were developing personality traits throughout the war, just based on their proximity to the light side of the Force. And the Jedi encouraging individuality among the clones. And so I thought that was really what influenced the clones to show so much personality during the Clone Wars. Then when Order 66 is given, I think that it was really clear cut for those clones that were out there to kill their Jedi commanders, their Jedi generals. But I don't think it's all that clear that the ones that were out there are going to instantly then suffocate their own personalities and become that way. Now, the caller brings up the clones on Kamino when the Bad Batch return and they see those troopers walking around. Those were probably, you know, fresh out of the tube troopers. So they didn't have that personality developed yet because they weren't out on the field fighting with the Jedi generals.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And that is actually how I interpreted it. I interpreted the shinies that you saw in those in those episodes being exactly what you say, Jim. I think that they haven't gone out there. The other thing I want to mention too, in addition to just the, yes, I think being that close to Force sensitives had the impact that you're describing. But if you go back to that ambush episode, the very first, one of the very first episodes of Clone Wars, where Yoda is hanging out with those clones, they're almost shocked that he sees them as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you can tell that it's the first time for some of these clones that anyone has ever talked to them as if they were individual. And that's, yes, it certainly has to do with Yoda's connection to the Force, but also just the overall philosophy that all living beings are unique, special, and should not be taken for granted or whatever the case is. So you're right. I think that the Jedi working that closely with them gave these guys the confidence and the freedom to express themselves as individuals in ways that the other troops couldn't. So that's a good point.
That's how I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. We've got super chat from Alex. Alex says, Omega bugs me. Can't pinpoint one specific reason why, but she does. Love you guys. Keep up the great work with the after show. Thanks, Alex. I get it. Like I said, my wife was watching it this morning with me, and she goes, she doesn't feel very Star Warsy to me. But then, as I said, my daughter was like, what? You know, so to each his own, I suppose.
When she's using that laser bow, she certainly looks Star Warsy to me.
Yeah, I'd like to see her use that more.
And I prefer her without the Kamino headgear, the forehead wear. I prefer her without that. And that gave her more of an exotic quality, maybe more of a Star Wars quality. But I really preferred her without that thing on.
I agree. I thought it gave her too much of a Star Trek quality.
Oh, yeah, yeah. More exotic, I should say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, more sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Alex jumps back again. That's very kind of you, Alex. Thanks again for another super chat. More Jason Swank, Dave Filoni impressions, please. Well, whenever, you know, whenever the spirit moves me. And he's sort of like George now to me, where if I read an interview with him, that's the voice I hear. It's just, It's amazing to me that more people don't do it, because I think it's one of the most easily impersonated voices.
It is. Well, remember George would go, and Filoni goes, And so, like, when they would be working on Clone Wars stories behind closed doors, all you would hear is like, you guys are thinking it
you
out.
You got anything? No. All right. All right. Back
and
to
the
phone.
It's so true.
We got
and
Jeff,
it's so true.
Jeff from Williamsport. Hey, Jeff, welcome back to Rebel Force Radio. Patreon member. And thank you for being a Patreon.
Yep. Hey, no problem. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Oh, very well.
I just wanted to say that I think that while I totally agree with you guys on what you're saying about this particular episode, at least so far, I think we need to give it some time. I know we only have 3 episodes left, but give it some time to make sure that some of these episodes don't actually do pay off. I'm the guy that brought up the Clone Rebellion on the chat earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Jason called me Jill. Those were my initials, J-L-L, not Jill.
Oh, but, sorry about that.
Anyway, no worries. So there was that, the Clone Rebellion. But I also thought, you know, for this episode, I actually saw a possible payoff to this episode. So if the Clone Rebellion does happen and the Bad Batch sort of get drawn into it, I think, you know, you may need a reason for Sid to side by them or to defend them or protect them in some way or another. And I think this episode builds up the reason for her to have loyalty to the Bad Batch.
Yes.
So I just, I may be putting way more thought into it than the writers are. I don't know. But I'm just saying, I think, you know, for those sorts of possibilities, I think we need to wait till the end before we say, well, this didn't pay off.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think that's, I mean, sure. All we can do at this point is take it episode by episode. Something else that could pay off, I don't know what you guys think, Jeff, we'll keep you on the line here for a minute, is Omega. You know, she has two moments where she kind of pushes maybe the limits of what less naive person might do. I mean, she really encourages the Bad Batch to save Sid. And then she speaks up when they're ready to bring the sword or the knife down on Visago's neck, or not Visago, sorry, Roland's neck. And so she's you know, putting herself out there in defense of people when they show some sort of kindness that registers with her. So she's they're clearly showing her as someone who has a pretty profound sense of compassion. I was going to say justice, but maybe that's not even the right word. I think it is compassion, love, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's great. I totally think that's right on. I think I'd love to see them pay that off with some of these characters that she has defended come back at the end of the episode. And, you know, characters that you would not have expected to protect or to fight for the Bad Batch to do so because of her.
Yeah, like this Roland guy. You never know. I mean, if they if they cross paths again, he might be willing to let something slide or, you know, help him out.
I mean, it's a little bit like the Callus thing in Rebels, but I love that bit of stuff. So I'll see it again and again.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you very much. And of course, thank you for being a Patreon supporter. Really, really appreciate it. Monty G in the chat, she says, I'm torn on if I want Crosshair to rejoin our heroes. He's a formidable bad guy. What do you guys think? Have you thought about that much, Jim? Like, do you really want Crosshair back, or do you think he's better served as or better service to the show as a villain?
Yeah, he's a great villain. And, he's such a great villain because he comes from the Bad Batch, and that's so he's tragic, you know, he's a tragic villain. I think, but I just think the foreshadowing has been laid where there is going to be an attempt to redeem him. Whether he stumbles into redemption or the Bad Batch push him toward redemption or something clicks in his head.
Speaking of that, that was a topic that we covered on the latest episode of Rebel Force Radio. There was a great voicemail that we received, and he had a theory about how the Bad Batch episode or season one might end, and we riff on that for a while. So that's, if you want more of that conversation, check it out. It's available on YouTube, and if you're a Patreon All Access member, you can actually watch the complete video of the last episode of Rebel Force Radio. Let's see. We've got a couple more minutes. So if you want to get that last minute call in, go ahead, ring us up 708-866-1737. Really do appreciate that. I got to say, we don't say it enough about the chat, during these shows. You guys are just awesome. And it's wonderful to see the same, you know, some of the same names each and every week, regardless of when we run the show live. So we really appreciate your support and being there and supporting each other and encouraging just fun, healthy conversation and speculation and all of that. Let's see here. Alex is jumping in. Can't forget about Jimmy's Zero impersonation. So,
okay. Well, you know, you can join us on Patreon to become eligible to win a Zero the Hutt sculpt. Here, let me show you.
I got it right here.
Oh, great. Thank God, because my armpit was right in the frame, and that was nasty. But, yeah, okay, there he is.
There he is. Hello there. Thank you so much, Alex, for your kind super chat.
All right. There is a zero warm-up that I haven't done, but...
Is there a senator in this neighborhood?
I do like Zero the Hutt a lot. And it's a shame that he cannot make an appearance in the Bad Batch because he was just left for dead. They didn't even bury the body.
No.
They just shot him and left him there out in the middle of the...
His girlfriend shot him in cold blood, man.
Snooty. Snooty, after all I've done for you. Leaving me here to rot. Let the vultures pick away at me. Ugh. I should have stayed on Coruscant.
So all you have to do is just be a member of RFR on Patreon. Look for this picture of Zero the Hutt, the one Jason's showing on the screen right now. You'll see it there under the headline, Zero the Hutt Needs a Home. And all you have to do to become eligible to win is type in verbatim. Verbatim is the word. Type in the comment field, I want to party with Zero the Hutt. And that's how you become eligible. So it only takes a buck to join us on Patreon. We're getting close to 1,000 supporters. We're so close. We're at 992. And that number will reset at the beginning of next month, believe me. So I just want to see us cross that 1,000 mark for the first time. And whoever is our 1,000th supporter will be entered to win 5 times. So that's the only time anyone will get a multiple entry. And then we'll pick the we'll pick from all the entries. We'll pick a winner at random on the 3rd of August. So you want to get them done by the 1st. We'll shut off the comments on the 1st. And then on the 3rd, we'll choose.
You know, I just thought of something. I hate committing us to something on air, but something we might want to consider doing is we should do a commentary on that Clone Wars movie. That would be a hoot.
Such a long time. Someone recommended we do that. Just this week,
someone
recommended we do a commentary for the Clone Wars film. So, yeah, maybe we could do that before the summer's over.
Yeah, that would be a good time.
Or
a lot
any
of good
time
Zero
during...
stuff in that.
Oh, yeah. The most 30th. That's where I made my debut.
Yeah, I would love that. I gotta go watch it again properly, but
sorry. Mine has a little chip there up on the up there. Yours will not have that chip. Trust me on that. That's how I know it's mine.
We call that as collectors. We call that patina. You know. Well, it's been a great, great time hanging out with everybody. Really appreciate it. Once again, thanks to all of our Patreon supporters, and thank you to our callers and those of you in the live chat, and especially Tyler Page, who helps make it all happen. Thank you, Tyler. As we like to do, since you've been listening to the conversation for the last hour plus, anything that you want to mention, anything we might have left out about this episode?
Not a ton, but there was, Omega's moral compass is sort of weird to me because she's like, let's help Sid, you know? Mm-hmm. But then by helping Sid, a room full of people get slaughtered by the Pikes. So,
Hey, look, you're going to make an omelet, you're going to break some eggs, all right, Tyler?
Yeah. But do you guys think that there's any chance that Omega could, kick the bucket in this show or not?
No.
It's a PG show, and I didn't think so, but she's
can't kill a kid.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Not in the show. I don't think anyone's going to die in this show the way they're going, at least of any... any real consequence. And not that, look, I don't want to be so simplistic to say, well, the only way to make this thing work and resonate and be dramatic is, you know, to have characters die off. You know, it didn't work so well for the sequel trilogy, in my opinion. So I'm not suggesting that, but I would just like to see more continuity between the episodes, and I would like to see more ramifications, more... dealing with issues from previous episodes and letting them build on each other a bit more. I certainly recognize the need for you know, one-offs and things like that, of course. But I feel like we've just been, Jim used the word stagnant with the development of the characters, stale, or I can't remember the, what you said exactly, but I think it's very well, it's just stalled. I think that was what you said.
I think the word you're looking for, Swank, is meandering.
Yeah,
meandering. Meandering. And that's what's going on a little bit with the overall mythology for this show. Still, it's a joy and a treat to watch every week. I think we're just looking for a richer experience that pays off with a bigger story. The seeds have been planted, and my goodness, have we been watering those seeds? So it's time to see some seedlings grow into full flowers, and we need to see that on this show. But again, a visual treat every week. It's Star Wars, and so I do appreciate that. You know, I see a lot of people saying, how could you people complain? There was a time when we weren't getting Star Wars, and now we're getting it every week, and it's great. I think that's kind of a stale thing to say at this point, right? Because we're being overwhelmed with Star Wars content right now, and I think that it's a responsibility to us as an audience to be vocal about the things we don't like and the things we like a lot. I think that's important, and the Disney company certainly listens to that kind of stuff.
Mostly.
But, I mean, how can you please everyone, right?
Sure.
So any critique needs to be taken with a grain of salt. Overall, I think the show is a great accomplishment, but I want to see the story become an even greater accomplishment. Baby Rancor, not in this episode.
Thank God. All right. That'll do it. I'll just leave you with this thought. It's better than any episode of Droids or Ewoks.
Ooh, how rude.
All right. Well, thank you, Tyler. Again, thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. Please check us out at RebelForceRadio.com and, of course, all of our social media channels at Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. If you're watching this on YouTube right now and you haven't subscribed, look, you've watched this long, hit the subscribe button and click that notification bell so you'll know when we release new content, as well as go live with more of these after shows. So, as always, much appreciated. We will see you next time here on Rebel Force Radio. So until then, I'm Jason Swank.
I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
Jim, people are upset that they didn't get to hear you do the line. The Clint Howard line. So can you give it to us here for the end?
Oh, jeez. I'm infested! Thank you, Clint.
I meant to bring that up earlier.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.